All right. So if you go to that website, sometime, hopefully later today, I will post my recording of what I've said today, starting about now. And I will also post any pictures I take of the board. I try to remember to take a picture of everything I do on the board. So you can review it later if you want. If, God forbid, I make a terrible mistake on the board, I'll go do some image editing to fix it after the fact. But hopefully if I make a mistake, you'll tell me right away and we'll fix it right here before any embarrassing pictures are taken. Okay. So, you all know where this building is? LBV stands for the person that gave a bunch of money, but it's the science center, the place with the pyramid. I'm on the third floor. Okay. Lamar Bruni Bergara. So, everybody have the book still? Probably took Business Math 1. I'd recommend getting the book. I don't think I'll assign any homework today from the book, but I may in the future, so be aware of that. And if you turn to the second sheet on your syllabus, very useful stuff here. I've made up a schedule. I can't predict the future perfectly. So the exact schedule of topics here and the corresponding sections in the book, you know, if things go a little faster, a little slow, that'll have to be adjusted. But I can be pretty confident about the due dates. So what I do is this is day one. I'll assign some homework today. I'll just write something on the board, and I'll indicate that it's a homework assignment. On Thursday, I'll assign some more stuff. That'll be the second day's homework. Then next Tuesday, I'll assign some more stuff. That'll be the third day's homework. And then you'll see that on day five, so that would be 2 weeks from today, the homework assigned on the first 3 days is due. If you can't make it to class for some reason, just email me your homework. That's fine. Take a picture of it and email it to me. But just get it to me on time so that we can move on. I think it's a bad dynamic when people are desperately working on their homework instead of paying attention to what's going on up front. So I'd like to collect the homework at the beginning of class and just... Again, if you can't make it to class, just send it to me by 9:30, and it'll be the same to me. So that's the plan for the near future. There are more long-term things to think about in the syllabus. Let's see what you're interested in. Any questions about how the course is organized?
So everything's going to be on the board. You sign homework, it would do by hand, and
yeah,
we have the test eventually.
And then there might be a homework assignment where I tell you to do something in Excel on a spreadsheet and print it out. But most of the stuff you can do by hand. Calculator helps them. I'm not I'm not using one of those online systems, so turn in directly to me. Other questions?
And you're going to tell us what verse to work on and stuff?
Yeah, if I pick something from the book, I'll tell you, you know, do this homework problem, you know, exercise number whatever from this chapter, this section. I think today I'll just make up the problems on the board.
I try to have the homework approximately match the stuff we talked about that day.
And yeah. So you may have already read the syllabi if you got it by email. If you haven't read the syllabus, of course, get a chance to read it and ask me questions about it whenever. The thing about me is I use email email a lot. So if you want to contact me and I'm not in my office, whether I'm teaching another class or in a meeting or whatever, or because, you know, it's 9 o'clock, and, send me an email. I usually respond no later than the next day, except I probably won't respond on Sundays. So if you send me an email on Saturday night, I might not get back to you till Monday, but email is the thing I check more often than anything else. You know, I check social media maybe once every couple months. You know. Send me the email, and I likewise send emails. So I've already tried to send all of you emails by using whatever email address you have in with the registrar. That may not be your preferred email. So what I'd like you to do is just put your name and whatever email address you'd like me to reach you at on here. And as long as you check it roughly every day or every 2 days, should be sufficient. You should have a... If you don't like your dusty email account, I know you can set it up to forward its stuff to another email account, so all the same. One thing I've noticed about the TAMU email accounts is that if I just leave stuff in my inbox folder and I don't move it to another folder or copy it to another folder, it gets deleted after 30 days. So I have to be careful about that. So you can think about how you can solve that problem for yourself. Same with stuff I send. If I just send something and it just stays in my sent folder and I don't copy it to somewhere else, it disappears after 30 days. So I have developed my own system for making sure I don't lose stuff, but be aware of that problem. I've had people that, you know, got an email from me and then, you know, 2 months later they couldn't find it. Questions about the course structure that I can answer. Okay. What is Business Math 2 about? In one word, what's it about? Starts with a C.
Calculus.
Yeah. In some other universities, a course like this would be called business calculus. I might describe it as non-engineering major calculus or non-math major calculus. What the difference is basically, we don't use trigonometry here. If you were building a bridge, trigonometry would be pretty important, but we're not going to get into trigonometry here. And there are various other topics that in calculus that could be covered, but we don't cover them because we're trying to do calculus in one semester. The engineers, they do calculus in three semesters, right? So it's a selection, and it's an attempt to pick the stuff that would be most useful for someone in business or someone in the social sciences. Social sciences, what? Why would you care about calculus in social sciences? Is anybody majoring in one of the social sciences? Not here, or not yet, or too shy. Well, anybody here majoring in business? Okay. Anybody here majoring in life sciences or chemistry? Okay. Well, in business, as much as in the social sciences, calculus helps you model change. That's the biggest thing, probably. Understanding how stuff changes. Sometimes you can get by just saying, there was today, or there was yesterday, now there's today, then there's tomorrow, and your model of change is, what is the relationship between yesterday and today? And what is the relationship between today and tomorrow? It's just steps, one after the other. Calculus is when you want to model stuff as a continuous change. Which, if you're as old as me, I mean, there's so many days in my past, they all kind of blur together. You know, I just make a graph, right? And a graph of my height or a graph of my bank account. It can look... If I zoom out, it can look kind of like a smooth curve. And that's where calculus can really shine. The two things calculus does with continuous change is we look at rates of change at a moment in time, called instantaneous rates of change. When you graph out the history of something, those rates of change are slopes of tangent lines. The other thing we look at is accumulation, something, a total. Totals of continuous growth or continuous loss. Things are going well, your savings account grows. When things are going poorly, your savings account shrinks. Right? Graphically,
What these totals look like is you go out, you have some starting time, and you have some time where you stop and you compute your total. And what the total will be is it'll be an area under a curve. That's what it'll look like graphically. And symbolically, these things are derivatives. And you may have heard that word before. These things are integrals. And that's a very high-level sketch. It's going to take a lot of time to go into the details of these things over the semester. But that's probably the biggest application, understanding or modeling change as a continuous process as opposed to a discrete step one, step two, step three process. This process is all something you model, something is always changing at every moment. And sometimes that's actually a simpler model than the model of day one, day two, day three, day four. Day by day sounds simpler, but if you get into stock prices or something and you're measuring things, I don't know if you're a high-frequency trader, you're measuring things in terms of nanoseconds. There's a lot of nanoseconds in a day. Continuous models can actually be simpler. And even with, your savings account, with the balance only changing once a day, say, or even once a month, you know, what happens after there's been 100 months or after there's been 5,000 days? That's a lot of data points. You may just want to have a graph and think about it as a continuous curve, maybe a simpler model. You can often find a simpler formula if you make things continuous. And the other big one. Other big application, how about continuous change? Optimization. Right? This is a big one. Now the idea is we have something, and we have, I'll say higher is better in this coordinate system, and then I've got something and I can control, say, where I am on the horizontal axis. I can control my horizontal position, and let's say there's some curve that represents the relationship between, this is a bad choice. This is a good choice. This right here is a really good choice. This choice, not as good. This choice, right, that horizontal coordinate, that's bad. And so where do you want to be? You want to be right here at the top. You want to make the best choice. Okay. Now, if you're modeling things as a continuous curve, well, the best choice is right here where you have a horizontal tangent line. And that is where the derivative is equal to zero. So this is one of the reasons, besides just making things simpler, why you might want to model things as a continuous curve. Because if your model is not a continuous curve, but it's just a bunch of data points, how do you find the best spot? Okay, look through all the data points and try to see, okay, so which one was the best? Well, that's kind of too late, right? You've already made your choices. That's how you got the data points. How do you predict? Well, you make up some model, some formula, and then with your formula, you graph it, and then you don't have to check every point. You couldn't because there's infinitely many. If your formula is not too hard, you can take the derivative of your formula and do some algebra and figure out where the derivative is zero,
and then you've got it. You've got your, you know what the best choice is. So that's what we're about this semester. Questions, comments? Okay, who knows what a derivative is? Easier question. Who knows what the derivative of x squared is?
X.
2x.
2x.
Okay, heard that one before.
I think that at least some professors teaching Business Math 1 get as far as chapter 10 in the book. So some of you have already seen some derivatives. Maybe some of you haven't seen derivatives. I don't know. Probably no one's eager to volunteer. No, I have no idea what's going on.
Okay. Now, it's great to know things like this. This is a pretty handy trick. And already, if you know this kind of thing, and your curve is a parabola, then you can figure out where the horizontal tangent line is. Just need a few more ingredients after this. Now, there's a notation. So there's a couple ways that people write it. This is the prime notation. You have a formula for your function, or just a letter for your function. And you put a little prime, right? Just a little mark up there. That means the derivative. This notation is a little more elaborate, and you have to be careful of it because I'm not multiplying anything by d here, okay? The dx, that's just one thing. It's not a d times an x. It's just a name. For the same reason, Dave is not D times A times B times E. Unless you're doing some kind of really bad math joke. Okay? So, the notation could be a little elaborate. This kind of notation goes all the way back to Isaac Newton, late 1600s. This goes back to Gottfried Leibniz, early 1700s. They discovered calculus independently because Newton was really slow about actually publishing. He told his pals in Britain, didn't bother to tell people in Europe right away. Okay, that's great. But what does it mean?
Okay.
So, I
gave a little bit here, right? I said derivatives are slopes. This is my little procedure here for illustrating what this means. Okay. Next, I'm going to choose an x-coordinate. Let's call this x-coordinate A. All right? Okay, so give me a real number, please.
Two.
Two.
Small number, we'll call it h.
It can be positive or negative, but it's supposed to be small. point one is small enough to illustrate what I want to say. How small it needs to be depends on the specific function and the specific point you're taking the derivative at. But the idea is if it's small enough, then you'll see what's going on. Now we're going to plot two points on the curve. So the first one will just be at x equals a. And since the relationship between x and y is the squaring relationship, the y-coordinate will be a squared. The other point we will plot is a, but then except we're going to change it a little bit. Calculus is about continuous change here. So continuous change could be as small as you want. So just change the x-coordinate by a little bit. If h is positive, you're moving to the right. If h is negative, you're moving to the left. But just a little bit. Okay. I won't draw this perfectly to scale here. I need to see what I'm doing. Okay. So there we are at 2.1. Now, where did my y-coordinate go? Well, it went all the way up to x squared. And now, I said derivatives are slopes. Okay. You've got two points. Which means you can find a slope. The idea is that if you're just looking at a small piece of the curve and your curve is smooth, then it's very, very close to a straight line. If h is small enough, then a straight line approximation becomes very good. And that's why we need to make it small. Because obviously on a big scale, the parabola is not straight. On a small scale, it looks pretty straight, though. All right. So we're going back to something earlier now. Two points. What's the slope of the curve? The slope of the line. What's the slope of that red line? How do we find the slope? Rise over run. Very good. I put little parentheses around this part of the equation to indicate that it's kind of a side remark. Just remember that's what a slope is. Letter M for slope. If you want to, that's fine. I don't care what letter you use. You don't have to use the letter at all if you don't want to. That's not good timing. Okay. So let's do the easier one first. What's the run?
0.1.
From x equals 2 to x equals 2.1. The run is 0.1. So you just take the difference between the x-coordinates. In general, you would have this, right? In our particular example, it's a 0.1. Ah, but now for the rise. So here, we're looking at the change in the y-coordinates. This is the rise. So the y-coordinates were found by squaring the x-coordinates. Okay, so we need to know a little bit. Okay, this one's pretty easy. A is 2, so a squared is 4. A plus h is 2.1. What is a plus h squared then? Three options at this point. Either you memorize 21 squared, and then you move the decimal place over two spots, or you do the multiplication in your head, or you get a calculator. I guess the fourth option is do the long multiplication on paper. What's 2.1 squared? I can wait.
Yes, what's 2.1 squared?
Yeah.
4.41.
Great. Right over here. That's the this is the 2.1. This is the 2.1 squared. So right here we're at y equals 4. Up here, because x went from 2 to 2.1, the y went up from 4 to 4.41. Alright? Now the a squared, the 2 squared is just the 4. So the run is 0.1, the rise, well, subtract off the 4, right? You just get the change from the 4 to the 4.41. It's a 0.4. It's a 0.41. So here we go. So the slope is 4.1. And there's one more thing to do. But before I did say that, are there any questions about how we found the slope here? Two points. You have to have some kind of convention about what's the first point, what's the second point. Once you have that convention, it doesn't actually matter which is which, as long as you pick one and stick to it. I decreed arbitrarily this one would be the second point. So you do second y-coordinate minus first y-coordinate. That's your numerator. Your denominator is second x-coordinate minus first x-coordinate. Okay. Now the last thing you do is compare your m, your slope, to what? To the derivative. At x equals a. Okay? Well, the derivative is 2x. Now, 2x could be anything, depending on what x is. But it's 4 at x equals a, which is 2. And the 4 is close to the 4.1. And if we made h smaller, this slope would get even closer to 4. Okay.
that's what the derivative means. It's a formula that tells you approximately what the slope will be between two points very close together on the curve. And if you make h really, really small, you can't make it zero because then you'll get division by zero here in your rise over run fraction. But if you make h really small but not zero, I claim the slope will get really, really close to 4 as long as you picked the a here to be 2. So derivatives tell you the slope. And a lot of times, it's actually simpler to just say the slope is 4 at our one point on the curve and not worry about, well, what's the other point we're measuring the slope to? Right? Is it this point? Is it this point? You know, I go from here to here, here to here, here to here, here to here, here to here. A lot of times, it's simpler just ignore that issue and just take the derivative and get your 4 and move on. So you don't have to worry about this kind of thing. Sometimes you might care about the difference here, but usually the whole point is that the difference between these two is small. So you use the simpler 2x formula, right? It was a lot less work to just plug in to the 2x than it was to do all this stuff, right? All you had to do is choose the x coordinate, which I called a, for the point I was interested in, and I got the slope. Whereas I got an approximate slope, yeah? If you wanted an exact slope between two actual points, then you've got to choose this number h, hope you choose it small enough, right? For the curve to be approximately a line. Then you've got to do all this computation, get this fraction. Often the derivative makes your life easier. Now, this is where the boards get all filled up. This is where I have to take some pictures. I'll go ahead and take a picture of the top board for good measure. I sent a sign-in sheet around with a name and email address requested on it. Did that get around to everybody? It's getting full. Let me...
start another one.
Do you want a personal email or
the
tab you want?
Doesn't matter to me. Wherever you would like to receive the email. Okay. Okay, so
another one. Jump to step six here, and then I'll go back and do the other five, because step six is the easy one, right? Just plug in. So the derivative at x equals a is, let's see, well, I told you that magic formula. Some of you already know it. Derivative is 2x in general at our particular point a. That would be 2 times negative 3, which is negative 6. So the idea is, if I would graph the parabola, and I'd probably want to graph it near x equals negative 3, then I could see something similar. Basically, if I zoom in enough, I should see a line, approximately, that has a slope of about negative 6. Okay. Let's see here. So what is it? Step 2 was choosing that A. Step 3 was choosing the H. Okay, step 4 here. We'll say that I did step one here. I plotted the whole thing. Now I want to zoom in on the region of interest. Okay. Okay. So we're gonna start at a equals negative 3. We're going to bump it up a teensy bit to negative 2.995, a little bit less negative. Okay. And of course, we're going to have our y-axis. Really, where is the y-axis? The y-axis is really way over there, yeah? Yeah, way over there. I'm not even sure it's on campus, I'm just indicating that y is up. I know the y-axis is not really there. Okay. And we want the y equals x squared curve. Okay. So we have to square negative 3. Well, that's positive 9. And I'm just going to scale things to make my life easy here. Okay. Okay. I forgot what the square of 2,995 is.
Maybe a calculator would help with that one. Can I bring my calculator? Maybe not.
8.97.
9.70.
Like that?
970025.
Right. Okay. So this is our a squared. This is our a plus h squared.
Okay. So. So this little circled four here was for... Plot the 2 points, right? Just like here. Okay, so I plotted the 2 points. Now, if you try and see the difference between the parabola and the straight line at this scale, good luck. You can try it on your graphing calculator, but the parabola is extremely close to a straight line at this when you zoom in this much. Okay, I mean maybe the parabola is a teensy bit. It is a teensy bit under it, you know. So I could maybe exaggerate that effect a little bit, but I'm exaggerating it. The line and the curve are really close together, and my line isn't even perfectly straight anyway. So, okay. And okay. So here we go. Slope is rise over run. Okay. The run is the easy one. You can see what it's going to be. It's going to be, this simplifies to just h. And up here, well, we've got what we've got. Some decimal expression. Subtract out some stuff here. Zero. 2975. Okay. If you like, you can multiply the numerator and their denominator by 100. Multiply them by 1,000. And you get 29.975, which is over 5. So just a teensy bit under 30 in the numerator. 30 divided by 5 is 6. So the whole fraction, I brought the negative sign out. This is about negative 6, you would think. Negative 6. It's about right. Okay. Now. Next. What? Okay. Before we go on, any questions or comments about what happened here? So the story here is the derivative is a slope, and it's more than just one slope. It's a formula for how to get the slope anywhere on the curve. We got the slope at x equals 2, and we got the slope at x equals 3. And it's an approximate formula for finding the slope between 2 points close together. Now that's great.
But why is it 2x? What has 2x got to do with x squared? I mean, I've given you some very strong numerical evidence that the formula is correct. But a mathematician is never satisfied with it works. A mathematician wants to know why. So I'm a mathematician, so you've been warned.
Why? Why is it 2x? Why is this got to be x squared? I don't see.
All right. Okay.
Draw a little picture here.
The more complicated the formula you're taking the derivative of, the harder it is to understand why the derivative of what is. But for a simple formula like x squared, I can give you a simple explanation for why the derivative is what it is. Okay? There's two ways to explain it. One way is you just do the algebra, right? That's not very fun, in my opinion. But here's what it would be. You would look at that rise over run business. Then you would have to remember, oh yes, the binomial theorem. I can expand the square because I'm awesome at algebra, right? You think back to college algebra or high school where we learned this trick. Okay. And then we do a little algebra. We're doing a little algebra dance here. Oh yeah, I can cancel the a squares. Okay. So what do I get? I get 2ah plus h squared over h. And then we get really clever. Oh, I can cancel some h's. Yeah, because there's a common factor of h in the numerator. And we knock it out of the park with a. See, that the denominator is gone entirely. It's just reduced to a 1. So all we've got left is what? 2a plus h, which is about 2a when h is small, right? Okay? So that's why. If you're comfortable with the algebra, well, there it is. You could do the same algebra trick, but with a little bit more work to figure out the derivative of x cubed. I like to draw a picture when possible. Basically the algebra, but with the picture. So there you go. It's the squaring function, so we make a square. Fine. Ah, but now we make a bigger square. Okay. Start with a smaller square. Okay. We'll say that's a square even if it's not perfect. There comes the bigger square. And now, I take the difference. So big square minus little square. Looks kind of like this. Cut out the a squared from the a plus h squared. So what do you have left over? You've still got this, you still got an a plus h, but now this little width here is just a little h, and this is a little h, right? Because the difference between a plus h and a is just an h. And then you look more closely, and you say, okay, what I've really got here is an a times an h,
And then there's a little piece here, a little square, H by H. Then I've got another piece here, which is another A by H. Okay. So you put them together, and, well, that's how we put them together. Here's our little H by H square. And then, so we put them together this way. So we got 2A times H.
Where did that come from?
Oh, I put these two together.
Oh, okay.
And there's the square again. So again, you start out with length A, area A squared, make things a little bigger, look at the difference. What do you have left over? Now you've got length 2A. Times the H, which is the little change in length. And you've got a little bit of leftover junk there. But that's the geometric version of the algebra. And I really want to have fun. You can make a picture now in 3D. Figure out the derivative of x cubed.
Is this still under the geometric?
Well, let's see. Yeah. Geometry for X. Formula works out to be this. Okay. Now. For your homework. If you can take a big square out of a little square, or sorry, if you can take a little square out of a big square, you can take a little cube out of a big cube. Yeah. And don't pack up yet. We still have 14 more minutes. That's homework one in the sense of homework assigned day one, right? First 3 days homework is due on day five, which is 2 weeks from now, because we have two class days a week. Okay. Some other ones.
Is there something to refer to that?
Well, you could go through that six-step process I did here. That's what I was thinking of. And It's also, you can also see chapter 10 in the book.
For both concepts?
Well, the thing in the picture is something I made up myself. So you'd probably want to look at what I did here. Got 2 weeks to figure this out. So my advice is to start early. Then you have plenty of time to ask me questions. I should warn you that sometimes, especially if I make the problem up myself, you ask a random person in the tutoring center, they might not know what to do because they haven't seen maybe what I just did here. Okay? But you can ask me. All right? I have office hours, I have an email address. Basically, you want to, especially for this, you know, compare the kind of stuff I did on the board with what I'm asking you to do here. I really tried to keep these two similar to what I did on the board. That's why this is not a self-contained problem, right? Pick three different A's and H's. A, H, one. Well, you got to look at what I did earlier to get the context of it. These problems are in the context of what we did here on the board. So if you ask somebody else how to do it, and they don't have this context, right, they're going to be stumped. So you'd have to show them your notes or the board photos if you wanted to figure out what I'm asking you to do. Other questions about these two problems here? Okay. So far, I've just been hinting at the formulas, right? I gave you the 2x formula, the 3x squared formula. There's a pattern, okay? So here's the pattern. That's the derivative formula for any power, okay? It works even for ridiculous powers like the negative 3.7 power, right? The formula is whatever that constant power is. To get the derivative, you change the power down by 1, right? That's the k minus 1 here. And then you multiply the new power by the original exponent there. And this formula actually makes sense if you think of it as a 1/2 power. 1/2 minus 1 is a negative half. So this formula here is actually the same as that formula there. It's just written in a funny way.
Wait, when did you say
that? I said that this thing here is the same as that. Oh, forgot the pun. There we go. There are two ways of writing the same thing. How about this? X to the minus 1. Use the power rule. Okay, so subtract 1 from the power, multiply by, or subtract one from, what should I say, the exponent, multiply by the original exponent. This is the same as saying that So you can graph all kinds of funny curves like these, and you can check using this six-step process that, oh yeah, 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 these formulas, crazy as they are, actually do give you the slopes.
And where does the k come from?
I just need a symbol. There's nothing special about k. Here k is negative 3.7, here k is 4, here k is negative 1. So in all these examples, I gave you the k, right? It was just a number I gave you. Okay. Now, I think in my... Here I put derivatives of polynomials as, you know, a topic for today. And we've got 6 minutes left, so I'm not going to try and rush through all of the stuff about that.
Because I just getting this is...
There's a little bit more. Basically... I'll have to cover that next time. So it's called the sum rule. Which looks like this. Then there's the constant multiple rule. And then the real big new thing will be the differentials. The differentials will make sense of that dx type notation. Okay. So the differentials will be in section 6 of chapter 10 of your book. These two rules are covered in sections somewhere in there, 4 to 5. And if you put these three rules together, you can find the derivative of any polynomial. So we'll have to get into that on Thursday. And as I said, I will post pictures of the board. I think there's still a few more boards here that I need to take pictures of. But so far, I don't think I've erased anything before photographing it. And, yeah, been recording everything. So you can review that if you like. If there's ever any problems with the stuff I put on the website, you know, like I post a bad link, you know, the pictures don't load, or...
Is a black boy?
Hmm?
A black boy?
No. Let's see here. It got erased, didn't it? But,
That's right, yeah.
Okay. If you go to Blackboard, you will find a link to this. I didn't put very much in Blackboard, but I did put a course announcement right at the top with a link to this. So if you go to Blackboard, you'll see this link, and then you'll follow the link. Okay. Right now, it's just got the syllabus and old exams that you can look at when you're worried about test time. But I'm going to put the board photos, the recording up there too. Hopefully sometime this afternoon I can upload them. So this homework is
not too hard. There will be harder homeworks in the future, just so you're warned.
You have 2 weeks to figure it out. In addition to the... This is day one. You'll also, during those 2 weeks, you need to figure out the day two homework and the day three homework, which will be assigned on those days. So, does anybody want to ask me another question? Yeah.
Do we need to get the book?
I think you should probably get the book.
What about the math lab? No.
No, you don't need math lab. I'm grading these myself. But you'll notice if you read the syllabus carefully, I just grade it for completeness. Okay. Look closely at what I say about homework in the syllabus. Okay. You don't need any code or anything. Someone else have a question? If you can survive without the book, maybe your friend gives you a copy of the exercise. If I assign an exercise from the book, fine. Especially if you need some reinforcement, if some of this stuff went too fast for you. You can review your notes. You can review my board photos. You can also look at how the book presents it. The book and I don't say things exactly the same way, but we are talking about the same topics.
Maybe you can borrow the book from somebody and give it a try and see if it's worth your while.
How often do we need the book? Would we need it next class period?
I don't ask you to bring the book to class. So you don't need to bring it to class. I don't bring it to class because I don't want to carry it. That's fine. If you look at the syllabus, it says that on tests you can't use a smartphone or a tablet or a computer. Basically, you can't connect to the internet. But you can use a calculator, you can use notes, you can use a book. Okay? So you might bring your book to class on the test day if you find the book helpful.
I didn't check the syllabus, but are we going to review before a test?
Yes, I haven't always done that, but I tried to pare things down to make room for review days. So you'll see that September 27th will be a review. The way I usually do a review is Q&A, so you ask me questions, and I'll try and clarify things. September 27th, you all can ask me whatever you want to ask me. I'll try and explain it. Anything that didn't quite make sense from earlier, I'll try and explain again. And then the September 29th, so it's on the second sheet of the syllabus. September 29th is the first test day. You can see what we're going to cover. And now it's time to go. If you have other questions, you can talk to me after class.